so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and as always, I'm wishing you the best, wherever you are, near or far. Personally, I live in Florida, and it looks like it's about the best place to be this time of year because I'm looking out my window at something that I would call National Geographic Channel Live. Because right outside my door, I have some giant iguanas walking by. I mean, these are humongous things, really almost 4 feet long, including the tail. Really, really incredible. And that's a big giant male. Then they have about five smaller iguanas that he's trying to keep track of. So that's like his little harem. And then other smaller males trying to get in the action, too. So that's really wonderful. And then we have some otters swimming by, and the otters regularly go up on the banks and roll over on their back and sort of sun themselves. They are just an absolutely very cute kind of animal. And all kinds of giant birds, like blue herons and wild turkeys, which are quite large. So to me, it's like a natural wonderland. And, of course, all the edible and medicinal plants that are right outside the door. And that's true wherever you are. I lecture all over the country. I'll be lecturing at Hippocrates Health Institute on January 28th, and that's in 2017. If you're hearing this show in the future. But you can always check out all of our lectures at naturalnurse.com and then calendar. That's where they're all listed. This week alone, I am doing an online lecture called Scientific Validation of Botanical Medicine, and that's going to be on Saturday morning. That's an online class. And then I'm teaching an herb certification course, which is a four-session class on ground. That means you come in person, and you learn about the basics of herbal medicine. And many of these classes, all the ones I just mentioned, have CEU credits. And those CEU credits are good whether you take them online or on ground. And in fact, one class has 18 CEU credits for all nurses. Also, massage therapists, acupuncturists, nutritionists, all of them are certified by CE Broker, which is the Florida State Certification Agency. And if you're not in Florida, many people who take my classes, which are CE certified in Florida, their states will also accept them. We just give them a completion certificate, and they're able to use the credits in their state as well. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today and for all your great feedback and phone calls and emails. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Either of those places is fantastic. And today we are very happy to bring on board our guest. We are interviewing integrative health nurse Cheryl Myers. And Cheryl is an author, expert on natural medicine, a graduate with honors from Purdue University, and had her first degree in nursing, also has clinical certifications in oncology and gerontology, and she has been working directly in the dietary supplement industry for many years. She's a natural medicine practitioner and a recognized expert in integrative health and dietary supplement use. And she's a nationally recognized speaker who has lectured along with me at many, many venues. And she has been interviewed by the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Prevention Magazine. And she's written articles in such journals as Aesthetic Surgery Journal and Nutrition and Complementary Care, and is very involved in research on botanicals, which she has presented at the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the North American Menopause Society. She is currently the head of scientific affairs and education for Europharma Incorporated. And on today's show, Cheryl will discuss natural remedies and other issues involved in blood sugar balance. So thank you so much for joining us today, Cheryl.
Well, thank you so much, Ellen. It's a pleasure to be here.
How is your new year going so far?
Oh, so far so good, except, you know, you're in beautiful National Geographic Florida with beautiful lizards and otters and palm trees and flowers, and I'm in sunny Green Bay, Wisconsin with freezing rain and snow and gray skies. So I'm glad to be able to visit you at least virtually.
Well, you know, I have to say that I do not like winter. In fact, I'm not a skier. If I never saw a snowflake again, that would be fine with me. But that's always been. So it's not like I just happened to wind up here. I actually live here, and then I live in Oyster Bay, New York.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I use the two places. But I purposefully, this is good for everyone to think about, you know, set up my life, as you have done, with your priorities. So you didn't just happen to be the scientific affairs and education director for a major herbal company with excellent products, Europharma. That happens because of your work and focus. And it puts you in a position to support yourself and support information so that it gets out to people in an appropriate way, as well as research. So I don't think we just all kind of sort of end up wherever. You know, I very purposefully made my life so I do not have to deal with snow. You know, that was like a priority above all else. So that's how it happened. And, you know, I am grateful, though, that I'm not there in Wisconsin, although that's a gorgeous place, too. You know,
well,
very rugged.
Is, if you, it, you know, for those people who do love snow, it is lovely. There's a certain beauty to it in the wintertime. The summers and springs and falls are just glorious because, you know, they got the color changing and the seasons and all the woodland creatures. I'm sure that you've read as well the philosophy that everything that you've done in your life has set you up to be exactly where you are today.
And isn't that true?
It
isn't
surely
that
is.
True? You becoming a nurse originally. Let's go back in time with you. When you became a nurse, which is
yes.
a while ago, were you, obviously you were interested in taking care of people because otherwise no one goes to become a nurse if they're not interested in taking care of people. But were you already involved in natural, or did that come along later in your life?
Well, when I became a nurse, it was, as you were right, it was many years ago. Originally I was not as interested in nursing as I was in psychology. I was working as what they call a psych tech, or a psychiatric technician on a psychiatric unit. And I was offered the opportunity to take a scholarship from the hospital that I work for to become a nurse. And originally I wasn't as interested in nursing, but I thought it was too wonderful an opportunity to have someone pay my tuition and books for me to go to school. So I thought, well, you know, this is something that will take me up the career ladder and it'll be more professional and I can use it as a base to go on and get my psychology degree. And I went to college, and within one semester, my thinking was completely turned around. I had some of the best professors ever, really professional people who had doctorates in nursing, who were not about, oh, all we are is the doctor's helper. This is an independent profession. And I was very energized, and I became a huge advocate for nursing care. One of the thoughts that stuck with me is when patients go into a hospital, it's not because they need a doctor's care. If they could get by with a doctor's care, they could stay at home. Patients go into hospitals because they need nursing care, and that it's a separate profession and has goals of its own. So I kind of came in it backwards, and then I became, you know, almost like an activist nurse about the going around and spreading the news about the independence of the profession and the things that could be achieved via nursing. But no, I was not very interested in natural. From the get-go, I was more interested. I went to Purdue University, which is a really good school. Go Boilermakers. But it tends to be a pretty rigid, black and white, inside the lines, outside the lines kind of school. And they were very anti anything that seemed to be coloring outside the box. So I remember a lecture by a nutrition professor who had a PhD in nutrition saying that Americans were so overfed and our diets were so full of food and chock full of nutrients that there was no way that anybody needed any of these vitamins and minerals and dietary supplements, that was just a bunch of hucksters trying to make a buck off of gullible people. And so I kind of came out, you know, saying the things that my professors had said to me. One of the nice things about getting a little bit older and more experience under your belt is you start to think a little bit more independently. And what really kind of piqued my interest was working in hospice care. So that I was a pain control specialist in hospice care, which is home care for the terminally ill. And these patients were trying everything because they had reached the limits of what mainstream medicine could do for them. So they were doing touch therapies and aromatherapies and massage and creative visualization and herbs and supplements and specialty diets and devices. And I saw some people, I wish I could say I found the magic cure, I did not. But some people legitimately did much better with the interventions they were utilizing. Maybe the doctors thought they had 4 or 5 months to live, and they went on to live another 2-3 years of pretty healthy living. I especially saw some of the dietary changes that could really support health in people, even as they were nearing the end of their life. I also saw people taken advantage of like you would not believe. I had a patient who was dying of AIDS, who was a professional photographer, who had an office and a practice in Manhattan, who had come back to the Midwest to die in his parents' home. So a very smart, business-savvy guy who was tricked into buying this rubber band device. So it was a band that went around his head that was attached to electrodes, and it was supposed to shoot bolts of electricity into the bloodstream as he slept to kill the AIDS virus. And this device only set him back $1,300. And, of course, it did nothing except make his wallet lighter. And that just infuriated me that there's people out there that would take advantage of people when they're at their most vulnerable and at their most desperate moments for hope. And I started to ask myself, how do you know the difference between what works, what can actually help people and make a difference, and people that are just trying to, capitalize on a sad situation? And be careful what questions you ask, because the next thing I knew, I had jumped the fence entirely and was working completely in integrative care.
Well, that is a great story, how, you know, with your own evolution of actually always being open-minded and evidence-based, which I think mm-hmm. is one of your really strong points in terms of how you have become a leader in providing evidence. So that discussed your evolvement into sort of from a nursing background going, wow, clinically, I see this works. So even though I'm told it doesn't, that's not right. So let me look a little bit more deeply into this. And that is really true, because the evidence has mounted to a point where, to me, it's excruciatingly incorrect that herbal medicine and other natural therapeutics, like you mentioned, visualization, massage, aromatherapy, that actually should be standard of care, written into the standard of care. And I really do believe, especially with cost factors supposedly being important, that botanical interventions should be used before pharmaceutical drugs in most cases.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, one of the myths about working in integrative medicine, about working with dietary supplements especially, is that people believe it's not scientifically studied. Like there's no clinical trials or there's no studies that shows their efficacy. Nothing could be further from the truth. And another belief that's incorrect is I've had people say, well, it's not like these things have been compared to prescription drugs. Au contraire, there's many, many studies that have incorporated an arm that includes a prescription drug where the botanical intervention or the nutraceutical, regardless of how it's based, the natural medicine has performed as well as or better than the drug that was used in the study. So there is an enormous
amount.
Wait,
I want to go into that a little bit more. That is very important and absolutely true. And this is in the mainstream medical literature. Not
absolutely.
In the New Age Journal, you know.
Correct.
It says that the herb or nutrient that has been tested, what you just said here, and we're talking here with Nurse Cheryl Myers, and she is a brilliant researcher and writer in this area, so you need to hear this. If your doctor says that natural remedies have not been studied, they're out and out incorrect. So when there is a one-to-one outcome study, very often the nutritional or herbal intervention works as well in terms of efficacy as the pharmaceutical it's tested against, and then there's usually a placebo control in some of the better studies, and with much less adverse effects, and with a much lower cost.
Mm-hmm.
So here's
absolutely
where it's exciting.
I hear you, and that's what's exciting to me as well, because I'm not a person who wants to take an herb because it was harvested by virgins wearing purple dresses in the under the new moon of the first Thursday in October. You know, and there's a lot of companies
that
out
works
there.
Too.
A lot of companies try to or are using interventions based on folklore or mythology, you know, that the story is just so interesting that's how they sell it. That does not appeal to me. What appeals to me is someone saying, here's the unique characteristics of this natural medicine, and here's the published clinical trial, or here's the published scientific study that was published in a peer-reviewed journal, hopefully indexed on Medline or PubMed, which is the electronic database of the National Institutes of Health, and here's how it worked. And those are the things that really appeal to me, because I think that's incontrovertible evidence that you can go to your doctor and say, well, here was a study that was published in this peer-reviewed journal, and it said, absolutely, herb ABC would help me with my asthma, or herb ABC would help me with my colorectal cancer, or herb ABC would help me with my, bronchitis, or my risk for Alzheimer's disease, or the list goes on and on. I believe that the most optimal wellness plan for any patient or any person, whether they're ill or not ill, involves the bringing together of scientifically validated interventions. And when we look at things like touch therapies and aromatherapies, they don't have quite as much research behind many of them as do the dietary supplements, nutraceutical interventions, but there's certainly some. One of the studies that just blows my mind was done in pregnancy. And in this study, pregnant women, sometimes the baby is not in the correct position to be born. They're into their ninth month, and that baby is just not flipping over the way the baby should. And so there was this ancient Chinese intervention called moxibustion. And that's where you do acupuncture on the feet, more specifically around the toes. And while you're doing this acupuncture, you light a stick of incense that's attached to one of the acupuncture needles. So it sounds like voodoo, doesn't it? But what they found is that a significant number of these babies that were treated with this ancient Chinese intervention, which was very, very safe, were flipped and got into the correct position prior to birth so that they weren't a breech presentation. And
yes,
that
I have
study
seen
was
that
public.
Done, and they do use, you know, it's not just any incense. This is an herb called mugwort.
Yeah.
So mugwort is the plant that is burned to create moxibustion, and there's quite a number of studies on its efficacy.
Well, the one that really blows me away is that the study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, and that is probably the most prestigious medical journal in the United States. So if a study is published in JAMA, then most doctors will say, well, I can't argue with that because this is one of the most prestigious medical journals in the United States, and the people on its peer review board are very high functioning when it comes to evaluation of medical practices. So, you know, I believe that we're doing our patients a huge disservice by limiting them to only one tool or one intervention, by saying that mainstream medicine is the only thing that will help that individual get healthy when there are so many other avenues that we can weave together to create a really effective plan to help people get healthy.
So well put, so well put. And the other thing, of course, which is, I think, impeding progress in this area are FDA regulatory stances, which really come out and say that we, even as nurses and even as educators and researchers, cannot claim that a specific supplement has a direct therapeutic action. You can say it, let's say, about the plant, but you can't say it about a product, even though it's been scientifically studied.
Yes, that's incredibly frustrating, especially as a medical practitioner who wants to help people get healthy again, because the FDA in the United States has had difficulty classifying natural medicines, dietary supplements, natural medicines. And so their category has been ill-defined. So for a long time, dietary supplements and natural medicines were considered the same as food because they were to augment your diet to help you be healthier. So, for example, vitamin C, you get vitamin C in oranges and grapes and apples, but, you know, you can also take vitamin C as a supplement. So they classified them as food. Well, that was incorrect, because if you are making chocolate chip cookies and one cookie gets 10 chocolate chips and the next cookie gets 5 chocolate chips, you're not going to hurt anybody. But if you're making dietary supplements and one tablet has 1,000 milligrams of the key active and the next has 200 milligrams of the key active, you're going to hurt somebody, or you have the more potential to hurt somebody, or at least to fail on your promise to deliver important benefits, important health benefits. And yet that's the way supplements were regulated. Now at least they've been moved into their own separate class. So above food, but below over-the-counter drugs. So you cannot make any health claims, but at least there's different practices in place to better assure that what's on the label is what in the product, and to ensure what they call GMPs, good manufacturing practices. It's still certainly not a perfect situation. I prefer Canada's classification system. There's a board in Canada, sort of the equivalent of the FDA, called Health Canada, and they assign natural product numbers. So if you can present to the Board of Canada that your specific intervention has human clinical studies showing specific benefits, then you are assigned a health claim. So, for example, as we all know, curcumin is a marvelous compound extracted from turmeric that has benefits in arthritis. You could never in the United States say that a specific brand name product had unique specifications, and that's why it was so successful in a study of arthritis. But in Canada, you can, because it's been proven in a human study and being assigned the natural products number. So the regulatory aspect is evolving. I believe in certain regulations that we need to protect the consumer, because there's bad players out there, just like there's bad players in all industries. It's not just dietary supplements. There's always going to be people that try to cut corners and use cheap ingredients or alter what they actually say is in the product to try to make more money. But at the same time, there's legitimate companies that are using unique forms of herbs and dietary supplements. I like to think ours is one of them, which is one of the reasons I was attracted to Europharma in the first place, that confer unique benefits and that assure more consistent dose-to-dose equality so that you get the benefits you're paying for. A really smart person said to me one time, and I've always remembered this, that the most expensive dietary supplement you will ever buy is the one that does absolutely nothing for you. So that's why it's so important to look at how is it delivered? Has it been used in a clinical study? You know, all of these different factors come in to making decisions about our health. And I think that the FDA has missed the boat on being able to help the consumer sort out what are the powerful, clinically studied, effective forms of natural medicines versus what's out there just trying to make claims and maybe putting sawdust in the product and selling it to me. And I think I'm getting a bargain, but then I get no health benefits at all. There has to be some middle ground.
So, Cheryl, we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, which you're listening to on Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, let's go into the topic for today, which is blood sugar balance, and looking at some of the natural remedies that can be so effective. People don't know that, and what a big, important health issue that is. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla, or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, Sar sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sar sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of Sar sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British inspector general of hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sar sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sar sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of Sar sarsaparilla called sarsaponin greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sar sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for Sar sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beard flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the Sar sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com. Once you go to naturalnurse.com, click on calendar, and that will drop down and show you all the places you can join us, either in person or online, to get both college credits and certifications. We've also been very, very busy, especially this time of year, with our class called Careers in Natural Healthcare. So, you know, perhaps you're listening to our discussion today with integrative health nurse Cheryl Myers, RN, and her journey, and, of course, myself, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. So how did we become professionals like we are in the natural products industry, as well as within the realm of working with patients doing natural medicine? Well, there is a path. There's a path there. And I think I did about 15 people this week alone who want to move in that direction, both young people looking into what would they like to do with their life, and then older people like myself who have retired from maybe something that was less than a satisfying career, but it paid the bills, and now really actually want to move into something that excites them. So if that's you or someone you know, get in touch and we'll talk about our class, Career Paths in Natural Medicine. And my guest today is Cheryl Myers, RN, an author and expert on natural medicine, and she is the head of scientific affairs and education for Europharma. That's Europharma, Europharma. And if you go to the website after today's show, we always have the show archived, and you will see a picture of Cheryl, and you will have a link to contact her, and you will also be able to track down all this information that we're talking about once again. So let's welcome back, Cheryl, and let's focus on blood sugar. Why is that an issue, and what can people do about that?
Well, it's the statistics are just shocking on the sheer volume of sugar that's coming into our body. When we look, for example, at the sugar consumption of Americans in the 1860s, so 1860 is about 30 pounds a year annual consumption of sugar. When we look today, that's over 200 pounds a year coming from sugar. I'm not talking refined carbohydrates. I'm talking just plain sugar. The same is true of high fructose corn syrup. In the 1950s, our average was about 5 pounds a year. Today, our average is about 65 pounds a year. So we have dramatically increased our exposure to sugar and high fructose corn syrup. Also, when we look at refined carbohydrates, which are the carbohydrates that have had their fiber removed, like white rice and white flour and white pasta, these compounds are very quickly converted into sugar in our body. then when we look at the inside of our blood vessels, the first step to a wide variety of diseases is irritation and inflammation of the lining of the blood vessel. And there's not much that's more irritating to the inside of the blood vessel than our high levels of sugar. Our bodies were designed, you know, our bodies are Stone Age bodies trying to live in a modern world with all these dramatic changes in diet. Our bodies were designed to accommodate a certain level of sugar in our bloodstream without any problems whatsoever. But since we've ratcheted it up fivefold, tenfold, a hundredfold, now we've dumped enormous amounts of sugar into the bloodstream. And if our body can't process it quickly enough, those high levels of sugar start to irritate the lining of the blood vessels. And that's the first step in atherosclerotic heart disease, what we used to call hardening of the arteries. That's the first step for deposits of plaque in the blood vessels. It also is a huge risk for our kidneys. You know, the number one cause of kidney failure and the need for kidney transplants is diabetes, because the tiny, tiny blood vessels, the capillaries, that are part of the filter system in the kidney, if they are overly irritated, inflamed, they eventually begin to fail, and the filtering aspect of the kidney is lost. When we look at the eye, one of the leading causes of blindness in America is diabetic retinopathy. That's when the tiniest blood vessels, the capillaries that feed the retina, which is the disc in our eye at which vision occurs, if those little blood vessels get damaged or clogged off, or if they rupture, they can no longer feed that area of the retina, and that area starts to die. When enough parts of the retina have been destroyed, vision is lost. And so you start to see that the number one cause of preventable blindness in America is diabetic retinopathy. So when we think about blood sugar, we think about diabetes, we think about it as an isolated problem or disease or dysfunction, but it actually is one of the instigators of a whole variety of different types of diseases within the body that are extraordinarily serious indeed. Additionally, circulation to the lower limbs can be impaired by chronically higher levels of sugar. And so as these blood vessels become less and less efficient because of that irritation, we see improper wound healing. We see wounds that won't heal, and that can lead to infections that cannot be completely ameliorated, and sometimes limb loss and amputations. So when we talk about carrying too much sugar in our bloodstream, even if it's not high enough to be diagnosed as flat-out type 2 diabetes, we are putting ourselves at risk for an innumerable amount of health problems that could be prevented, or we could prevent them from getting worse or even start to cause some repair if we can only get those blood sugar levels down into a range that our body is comfortable with.
Well, don't you think also, Cheryl, that, you know, I'm really for, and I imagine you are too, the test, which is a newer test called A1C.
Yes.
So why don't we talk about why is that important? And everyone can get that done because it's covered by health insurance.
Well, when we get the normal test for blood sugar, it's called a fasting blood glucose. And that's where you don't eat anything for 12 hours and you go to the laboratory in the morning and they test your blood sugar. And I always consider that a snapshot. That shows you at that moment in time what's going on in your body. And there are many, many factors that can affect whether that fasting blood glucose is high, medium, or low. So sometimes people may get an okay fasting blood glucose, and the doctor says, aha, you're fine. You don't have problems with diabetes, or your blood sugars are just fine. But as I said, it's a snapshot, and it may not give you the true picture of what's happening in the body over time. The hemoglobin A1C, sometimes just called the A1C, is like a video. So it doesn't just show you the snapshot. It shows you what's been going on for the last 4 or 5 weeks in the body. And it analyzes how much a compound in the body called hemoglobin has been affected by sugar, or they call that glycated. So when they look at those numbers, when those start to creep up, those numbers are much more indicative of ongoing issues with blood sugar. And so I, too, believe that the hemoglobin A1C, when we're trying to assess for diabetes, that that is the study that we need to be paying more attention to.
Yes, and the thing is, people can use that, I feel, as both motivation and something so they know they're going in the right direction, because as you said, diabetes is just affecting such a huge proportion, but you don't want to wait till you get that diagnosis. You want to see what direction your blood sugar is going in, because guess what? diabetes, particularly type 2, not so much with type 1, is actually self-induced. This doesn't just happen to people. You're not walking along and you catch it. You actually create it by making wrong choices.
Absolutely, but I will say that there are probably some other factors that play a role as well. Because there are people that seem to have get-out-of-jail-free cards that do not eat right and have a high amount of refined carbohydrates and sugar intake that don't develop problems with their blood sugar, and other individuals who do a better job, perhaps not perfect, that do eventually develop problems. But you're right. The vast majority of people with type 2 diabetes could have avoided having this problem in the first place had they had better choices in their life or better education.
And you're right, too, because we certainly do see the individuals, and I know some personally, who are literally well into their hundreds. I mean, I can think of three people, 103, 105, and 106, who I personally know, who are still running around, by the way, doing yoga, dancing, running. I mean, amazing people. And I would say they do, you know, moderately well with their diet. They almost all drink alcohol, which, by the way, has been linked to longevity, believe it or not. Two of them still smoke one cigarette a day. So go no, you know. So you're right. There's always that individual difference. But nonetheless, most people develop particularly type 2 diabetes because they're eating things which their body translates into too much sugar, and that creates insulin resistance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then that sugar can't be effectively moved from the bloodstream into the cell. And since it can't be moved into the cell, it can't be turned into energy. So what does it do? It keeps circulating, and it keeps damaging everything it touches because the levels are too high. And then eventually the body grabs it and turns it into the storage form of sugar, which we call fat. So these people get heavier and heavier and accumulate more fat because the sugar can't go into their it can't go into their bloodstream, or it can't go inside the cell to be burned as energy. So when we look at individuals who have type 2 diabetes, it's a disease of starvation, ironically. The person's getting heavier and heavier, putting on more pounds of fat because the sugar can't be turned into energy, but the cell is starving because it can't get its energy source. So we end up, isn't that ironic that that we end up with individuals who seem to be getting plenty of food on board by the size and shape of their bodies, but at the same time their cells are starving for nutrition.
And I think that there's kind of an interesting parallel with that and using artificial sweeteners as a way around that, because that seems to not turn off the hunger center so that you actually still want more, where if you even had a small amount of natural sugar, it would have initiated a satiation response.
Absolutely. And then additionally to that, the body thinks sugar is coming on board. Even when it's not, and then that causes dysfunctions with insulin.
So that's all true. Now, luckily, though, since a lot of this problem with sugar, blood sugar dysregulation is linked to what we actually do in terms of diet and exercise, and the use of natural supplements can be so helpful, the good news, I think it's good news, that that's what causes it, rather than you just catch it as you're walking past the tree. Because
absolutely,
you can take much more personal responsibility to either avoid getting that problem. Like people might say, well, it's genetic. Like my own husband, for instance, he was overweight as a child, and he was told it's genetic because everybody in his family were these giant people. But he read, when he was young, like 15 or 16, something that said, no, what you eat has to do with how fat you are. He never even knew that. He just thought it was totally genetic, you know, it goes in your family. Well, then he realized it's because everyone in his family ate the same stuff.
Well, it's always an epiphany, isn't it, to realize that you have more control than you ever thought you did?
Yes, and that's the good news. That's where your kind of knowledge, you know, which you share so much with people, is really, really wonderful. So we can take responsibility for what goes in our mouth, for how much we move a day, make some effective decisions, and then, of course, use some really well-researched natural medicine that you certainly could share with us, some of those things that really help.
Absolutely. Well, you know, reducing, of course, sugar and carbohydrates, refined carbohydrates in the diet is always the first step.
Well, tell us what refined means, according to
okay,
you
refined
know, the
carbohydrates
right
when you strip the fiber off of a grain. When you strip that fiber off of the grain, it's digested too quickly, and it's converted into sugar too quickly. And it triggers a massive release of insulin from the body that is one of the precursors to developing insulin resistance. We don't want to do that. We want to leave the wrapping paper on all of our grains. So when you eat rice, when it's brown rice, it still has the fiber intact. So it takes the body a little bit longer to unwrap the present. It does it in stages. That means you get a more moderate insulin release. You get the right amount of insulin release to carry those carbohydrates into the cell. You don't get this dumping syndrome of huge amounts of insulin that lead to insulin resistance. When you are eating flour, when you're eating a bread product or a roll or whatever you're using for your bread product, if the flour is completely whole grain, it means the fiber is still intact, and it takes the body longer to unwrap that present. And again, it comes into the body in stages, and so you get a more modest insulin release. When you eat white flour or white bread or white flour cookies or white flour cake, all of those goodies out there that are sometimes so prevalent during the holidays, that hits your body like a freight train. The body doesn't have to unwrap it at all. It all hits at once. A huge amount of glucose is suddenly released into the bloodstream, and the body compensates by releasing a huge amount of insulin. And as I said, that's one of the major metabolic dysfunctions in the body that leads to insulin resistance. It also leads to hunger, because if you eat, let's say you eat something that's high in sugar, let's say you have a cookie and you wash it down with a high fructose corn syrup sweetened soda. So you've got a huge amount of sugar that comes into your body. Well, your body releases too much insulin, pulls all the sugar out of the bloodstream, and now your sugars are low. And what happens when your blood sugars are low? You crave sweets. You're hungry again. You crave sugar. So it's been shown that individuals who eat nothing during a day, if they actually fast and have nothing but water throughout a 24-hour period, experience less hunger than individuals who are fed refined carbohydrates throughout the day, because even though they have food coming in, it's making them hungrier because they're driving their blood sugars down by consuming sugar. Isn't that ironic? So that just, if you are struggling with your weight, a reason to avoid refined carbohydrates, whether it's sugar or high fructose corn syrup or white flour or white rice, the reasons to avoid that are not just about consuming the calories, but also about helping you avoid those blood sugar roller coaster rides that take you from feeling stuffed to feeling starved and having you overeat again.
And just so you know, the food producers are constantly trying to fool people, because that term, high fructose corn syrup, has kind of become an alarm value that people read labels for, so they are dropping that term on labeling, by the way, and just calling it fructose, because they feel there's a less consumer recognition of the alarm value. So very, very sneaky stuff with labeling.
Oh, and I also saw some commercials on TV where they're calling it corn sugar.
Right. So anything
crazy.
To fool everyone. Well, we're going to take another little quick break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion with nurse, integrative health nurse, Cheryl Myers, who's a wonderful researcher. And we're certainly going to talk about specific natural ingredients that are proven to help manage blood sugar. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. I am Karen Hartglass, the host of It's All About Food. Join me every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, or catch all of my shows in the archives. You can find my archive programs at the Progressive Radio Network website, or you can call my personal archive phone number to hear the most recent 5 episodes of It's All About Food. Here's the number, 1-701-719-0885. Here it is again, 1-701-719-0885. Learn about how we can solve many of the world's problems today and do it deliciously here on It's All About Food.
Hi, I'm David Crow, host of The Infectious Myths, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time here on PRN.FM. I love science the way it should be practiced, but a lot of modern science is corrupted by financial interests and serves a master other than the public good. Myths continue to be constructed around viruses, vaccines, forensics, and pharmaceutical drugs. People are dying and ending up in jail because of them. Listen to me as I deconstruct the myths that those who call themselves scientists weave, or when I wander into social and political topics. If you're new to the show, check out our past episodes at infectiousmyth.podbean.com.
Progressive Radio Network. The Thinking Person Station.
Thank you so much for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We love to hear from you. So just visit naturalnurse.com. You can send us an email or check out the classes under calendar. Look at our books under books and all kinds of radio shows, free articles for you to peruse. And today we are so happy to have as our guest Nurse Cheryl Myers, RN, who is the head of scientific affairs and education for Europharma Incorporated. And you can find her at europharmausa.com. And the link for that is going to be right with this show in the show description. So thank you so much. Is there any other place people can look for you, Cheryl? Is there a Facebook page or anything they should know about?
I do have a personal Facebook page. We also have a corporate company Facebook page. It's under Carry Naturally by Europharma, because the name of the brand of our products that's sold in health food stores and integrative pharmacies is Carry Naturally. So we try to release basic information on that Facebook page. That's an interesting place to come to visit, and we'd be honored if you liked us. And Europharma USA, EUROPHARMAUSA, to differentiate us from the European Europharma, that website gives a full listing of our products and some of the information behind them. And there's also a place called info@EuropharmaUSA where you can contact me if you have specific questions.
Excellent. Now let's talk about, since our little focus topic is on blood sugar, since it's such a huge, huge problem, both for people who have been diagnosed with diabetes or those who unfortunately might be pre-diabetic and on the way. What natural approaches could be used to reverse that issue?
Well, one of the herbs that I'm really excited about is a very poorly known herb, most people haven't heard of it, called Hintonia latiflora. And Hintonia latiflora is natural to Mexico and Central America. It grows in, it's like a tree or a shrub, a small tree or a large shrub that grows in the desert. So it's in a very harsh environment. And locals had used it as a tonic tea. So they would make tea out of the Hintonia bark, not for any specific ailment, but so much as just to improve health. German scientists 60 years ago, so a long time ago, German science has always been particularly interested in botanicals that can be turned into medicines for individuals with specific health concerns. So they became interested in this Hintonia plant, and they isolated a compound from the bark called cutaraginin. And they found that cutaraginin can play a really important role in reducing blood sugars in individuals who have high blood sugars, but had the excellent property of, if your blood sugars are already normal, it won't drive them into a dangerous range. So it does not take your blood sugar too low. So over the course of time, they developed it into a product that was on sale in Germany and later in other parts of Europe that was called Sucontrol D. Subject of several clinical studies and clinical research in humans showing that it could, over time, lower hemoglobin A1C levels by as much as 10%, sometimes 11%, depending on the study. It can improve fasting blood sugars by as much as 23%, postprandial blood sugars, meaning after you eat blood sugars, how quickly does your sugar return to normal? By as much as 24%. It was really, really interesting, the research that they did on this product. And so after many years of success in Europe, for the first time, our company licensed it and brought it into this country. So it's the first time it's been available in the United States.
Now, is it the same plant referred to as Paeonia lactiflora, or is it a different plant?
It's a different plant. It's a different plant, a slightly different variant. It also has some folk names, but sometimes the folk names are not indicative of the specific species.
Right. That's a big reason to learn genus and species. You're right.
Absolutely. So this is what has been clinically studied and developed in Europe over many decades.
And what was the pharmaceutical name in Europe?
Sucontral, S-U-C-O-N-T-R-A-L-D. And so Sucontrol D has been on the market for over 40 years, and it has many, I think it's up to 14 or 15 published studies. It even has studies in Europe where Sucontrol D was combined with people who are already on anti-diabetic medication. Now, remember, this was under the supervision of doctors, so this was not something people were doing on their own. But in one study of 178 people with type 2 diabetes, some of them were on oral anti-diabetics. Some of them were on diet changes only, so they were not on prescription medication. Some were using insulin, which is injectable, and some of the folks had such difficulty managing their blood sugars that they were using both oral antidiabetics and insulin. And over time, of those individuals that were using antidiabetic drugs and insulin, the medication was able to be reduced in well over a third of the participants or stopped entirely. So we do know that with a doctor's oversight, it can be used with whatever protocol you're currently using in order to see if you can adjust down some of the dosage levels by augmenting it with a natural product that also helps to balance the blood sugar, which I think is a very interesting way to go. But as I said, remember, this needs to be done under the supervision of a physician, and where they were monitoring blood sugars every single day as part of this study.
Well, one good thing I find with diabetics who I work with, and I have worked with literally hundreds over the years of type 2 who have actually been able to wean themselves off all pharmaceuticals, particularly the oral agents that bring your blood sugar in check, because one thing is they often are testing themselves. So that's the important mm-hmm. thing, because when you use something like Sucontrol D, although it's natural, since it works so well and it brings your blood sugar down, if you're also using another anti-diabetic type agent, it can get too low. So that mm-hmm. is very important to monitor.
Right. And as I said, I've been really, really pleased with the research that I've reviewed thus far on both the herb Hintonia latiflora and on the product Sucontrol D from Germany, that they've never experienced in any of their studies people whose blood sugar went too low. So it seems to have almost a built-in stopgap measure. You find that with a lot of herbs. They don't necessarily push up or push down. They push towards normal. And
right.
in this case, it seems to be true of Sucontrol D as well, that it's not necessarily pushing sugars down. It's pushing towards normal. And once that is achieved, it stops pushing.
Well, that is just amazing. So now this is considered a pharmaceutical in Europe, and yet it's considered an herbal supplement here. Is that how that works?
Correct. So in Europe, it's considered something of an over the, they don't have this designation in Germany, but it's similar to what we would consider an over-the-counter drug, where your doctor would recommend it and you would go to a pharmacy to pick it up. In the United States, no, because it's herbal-based, it does not have drug status. It does not have even over-the-counter drug status. So, yes, it falls into the realm of dietary supplement. And so when you're talking about it specifically as a product, we are restricted to blood sugar balance and maintenance of healthy blood sugar levels throughout the day, supporting healthy insulin function, supporting healthy A1C levels. It then gets converted into the supports for the structure and function of the body that the FDA allows.
Now, those are very powerful claims, though, because it can really help people understand what exactly you might want to do
right.
with Sucontrol D. which is wonderful. Now, let's say there was another herb which really hasn't gone through all those studies. Could they still go ahead and make those kinds of claims on a dietary supplement label?
Well, yes. There's two groups that are heavily involved in dietary supplements as far as claims. And one's the FDA about whether the claim is legal or not. Have you avoided making any drug claims and you're making what they call structure function claims, supporting the structure and function of an already healthy body? That you're allowed to do. But the truthfulness, the FDA is not so much at present monitoring for truthfulness. But the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, does monitor for truthfulness, and so does, even though this is not a governmental agency, so does the Better Business Bureau. There are certain arms of the Better Business Bureau that are active in examining claims for truthfulness. So if you had, let's say, I'm going to make this up, maybe you have a flower that grows in your backyard and you think, wow, this pretty little pink flower might be useful for blood sugar, but there's no data behind it whatsoever, and you dry it and put it in a capsule and sell it as Cheryl's blood sugar answer or whatever you call it on the internet, and you have not a shred of evidence to back up the claim that it does support healthy insulin function, then you can get into trouble with the FTC and the Better Business Bureau for making false claims to sell a product.
But with this
now,
one, and
ask me how vigorously that's enforced.
Right. Well, you know, it can be. I know
it
lots
can
of companies.
Be.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But we all have to
remain vigilant. Yeah.
That's true, because companies that are actually truthful and have been in this industry a long time, like Europharma and other really well-vetted companies, really won't take the chance because they have a lot to lose, because at any time the FTC can ask to see the studies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's usually the smaller players, and that's the blessing and the curse of the internet, of the individuals who put all their money into a gorgeous website and a fabulous campaign where they quote all kinds of data that doesn't maybe even really exist in order to sell products for $59.95 that 8 months later the government comes in because of complaints from consumers and finds out that they're not even selling what they're proclaiming on their website. And there's been a couple of really unfortunate cases of that.
Well, we're going to have to end because, believe it or not, we're at the end. But thank you so much, because I bet that's new information to many people. Hintonia lactiflora is the herb, and Sucontrol.
Mm-hmm.
Sucontrol. It's like control, only with an A.
Only with an A.
So
I think it's the German for control.
Yeah, that could well be. D. And
yeah.
Now it's widely available as a dietary supplement in the United States, which is great to know. It's backed by all this fabulous scientific research. Thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you so much for being our guest today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again. Myself and guest Cheryl Myers, RN, integrative health nurse, and yours truly, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. Find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, I'd like to wish you the most pleasant, wonderful day, and stay healthy.